Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Progressive Conservatism, Therapy for the Partisan Soul. My name is Mark Rattledge, your political shrink, here to provide you with insight and guide you into the next week. And I'm still not charging by the hour. Woe is me. We have yet another jam-packed show lined up for you today. Oh, God, I was actually just still compiling stuff for the show right up until we went on the air. We're going to cover the BRAC report. Going to pretty much go over in more detail the stuff that I reported on my blog in the article entitled Zombie Chickens and Electric Cows. From there, we tackle global warming. In this particular case, Barbara Boxer versus James Inhofe and the changes that will be happening as Barbara Boxer takes over the Environmental Committee in the Senate from anti-believing in global warming Senator James Inhofe. After that, I'll have Reverend John on to sing us his 2008 blues. He's got some things he wants to tell us. And if there's time, in the last couple of shows, I've had stuff jam-packed in, and I haven't gotten to either the last thing I wanted to get to or I've had to rush it. So I'm not promising anything, but if there's time, we're going to do a segment that I did on my blog a couple of times. I'm going to bring it to the radio show called Conspiracy or Quack. Conspiracy or Quack, which means I found something in the news, got absolutely no secondary verification of whether or not it's real, but it sounds bizarre, and I want to talk about it, though I have no clue if it's actually factual or not. Could be. Sounds true. Sometimes too good to be true. So we'll do Conspiracy or Quack if there's time at the end of the show. Right now, I want to give you out the number to call in. You can call in at any time during the show. If you missed the segment on zombie chickens, but you want to call in later on and talk about that, we'll go back to it. If you want to just bring up anything else that's going on in the news today, if I know what you're talking about, I'd be happy to talk about it with you. That number is 646-915-8862. Again, 646-915-8862. Give me a call. Let me know what's going on in your world. You can also contact me via Instant Messenger, AOL, MARKKIND 1976. That's Mark Kind with two Ks, 1976. All right. This is Blog Talk Radio, and right now, much like regular blogs, there's not really an opportunity to, you know, take on advertisements as of yet, though this is something Blog Talk Radio is working on. But I'm going to do something rather kind today. I'm going to talk about a place for purely to, one, just kind of explain how much fun I had doing it, and also to give them a plug because I really, really liked being there. Let me say this. If you're single or if you're married and you both work, getting dinner done the right way, you know, in a way that's healthy, can be difficult. You know, I go through this week after week, especially with my wife who has weed allergies, and we both are trying to eat healthy. And, you know, if I read one more book about, you know, like The Omnivore's Dilemma or anything else along those lines, it tells me just how bad the food is, you know, on a regular basis in the industrial market, i.e. McDonald's or what have you, I'm going to be sick. So we're trying to eat healthy, but we're trying not to go bankrupt in the process. And so where's the happy medium? Not to mention the amount of time it takes to get this done, because if you're not going out to eat a lot, you have to stay home and you have to cook, which means you have to go shopping. The other added thing about that, and this is what I have found since I've contributed to cooking dinner in the house, liberated man that I am, and that is knowing where things are, and I am no whiz in the kitchen. Before I got married, I put stuff on the George Foreman grill, put it on the plate, and ate it. If I couldn't microwave it or George Foreman grill it, I didn't buy it, and I didn't eat it. Of course, my wife has more picayune and more classy taste than all of that, so I actually have to make real dinners when it's my turn to cook, and like I said, I am all thumbs. Which brings me to a magnificent place that cuts out all the guesswork. really makes it easy for you to get dinner done the right way, in a healthy way, and in a fun way, as I found out for myself. DinnerDone.com, we have one here in Brandon. What they do is every month they change up the menu, and they have about a dozen or so stations, a dozen to about 15, each with a different item on the menu, a different main course. And they pre-cut up all the ingredients. They have all the meat there for you, again, pre-cut up, and they have the recipe right there in front of you in large, friendly letters, easy to read, easy to understand. And believe me, I hate reading directions. If it's too complicated, I don't want to be bothered. I just want to eat. So what they do is, like I said, it's in three or four steps. Everything's pre-cut. Even the spoons in each one of the ingredients is already preset to the amount of whatever that ingredient is. So if it's two cups, you actually have a two-cup spoon ready for you in the ingredient itself. Follow the directions. It's like working on an assembly line, only it's a lot more fun. They have one of these in Carrollwood, Tampa, Florida. They have one in Brandon, which is the one that I went to, and one in Centerville, Virginia. What you do there is for an hour or two, you pre-buy your dinner entrees. You make them while you're there. You wrap them up, and you take them home. We're on about our third since we've done this. They're delicious. I highly recommend that if you live in the Florida area or in Virginia, that you check out DinnerDone.com and give it a try, especially if you're on the go and you absolutely, positively want to start eating better, but you don't quite have the time to get to the supermarket or, quite frankly, spend that much time in the kitchen, because God knows my wife and I don't. So that's DinnerDone.com. Had a lot of fun doing this. All right, enough of the plugs. I want to talk a little bit about the Iraq Study Group. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. Basically, as near as I can tell, the big suggestion essentially was talk to the Iranians, talk to the Syrians, redeploy the troops to protect our interests outside of Iraq, and solve the Israeli-Palestinian question. Everybody else has done most of those details to death. I want to concentrate on just the Israeli one. And I'm going to make this real quick and real concise. A while back, when Yasser Arafat was alive, I said, you know, when this guy goes, then I think we'll have an opportunity to really promote peace in the Middle East via Palestine and Israel. He's the major stumbling block. Here's a guy that was promised the world, promptly walked away from it, probably saving Israel rather than destroying it in the process. And to me was the single biggest obstruction to any kind of state for Palestine. Then he dies, and I'm thinking, okay, great. You know, an opportunity to start all over again. Then the Palestinians do something interesting. They vote in Hamas for their leading government party. And Hamas has an opportunity to, now they're a political institution, they're not just a terrorist group, they have an opportunity to really provide leadership and take things in another direction. What do? They still continue with their charter that says, push Israel into the sea. These are the people the Israelis are supposed to sit down and talk to. Have you ever been mugged before? Have you ever had somebody put a gun to your head or a knife and they say, give me your money or I'm going to kill you? Do you find when you're in that position that talking to them and being reasonable really works, or do you just give them what they want? Most of the time, you give them what they want. You don't really engage in conversation with them. Then once you've given them what they want, you have two choices of what's going to happen. They're either going to leave you alone, having gotten what they wanted, or they're going to hit you over the head while they run away. Either way, you end up with less stuff and hurt in the process, possibly dead. This is the situation between Israel and Palestine. This is why I'm frustrated with this idea that, number one, somehow that if you solve this issue, Islamic terrorism is going to go away, because everyone seems to put together this idea that Islamic terrorism solely comes from the creation of Israel and the taking away of a Palestinian state. There was never a Palestinian state to begin with. Israel and Palestine were creations of first the League of Nations and then the United Nations. Palestine had every opportunity to become its own state. Instead of creating one out of a swamp, the way Israel did, they opted for war. As did the Jordanians, as did the Syrians, as did the Egyptians. But even before that, if you really read up on history, what you find is the Arabs were already upset after World War I with the West. If you read up on your history, and then maybe at another time on the blog I can sort of compartmentalize all this and label it all out where I'm getting my information from. But in short, they carved up the Ottoman Empire, and they promised, that they being the French and the English, mostly the English, and then the United States sort of piling on at the end, promised the Arabs independence. You know, when they carved up these individual states, Iraq, Iran, so on and so forth, Yemen, they said, you know, you will have your independence, and then promptly took it away. They still became surrogates of these bigger Western powers. That's essentially the beginning of why the Arabs are still pissed at the West. It's sort of emblematic in the creation of Israel, but it's a bigger issue. Much like when the French left Haiti, and when many of the Western European powers left Africa, the people living in those areas, Haiti in particular, became isolationist, xenophobic, and rightly so, I would, in some cases, considering that they were essentially, these surrogate states of these bigger Western powers with almost no rights. They said, that's it, everybody out, we'll take things on our own, built up big walls, and said, that's, you know, we are going to act independently of you. What's happened there is, you know, again, in Africa, in Haiti, as opposed to a place like the Dominican Republic, which welcomed, after independence, Western investment, is their economies atrophied, their governments atrophied, and you have a lot of chaos. Getting back to the Arab situation, what you have there is, again, a group of people who were waiting to, you know, push the Westerners out and have independence for the first time and have their Islamic law, their Sharia, have their, you know, independent Islamic states, and be done with the West, and that didn't happen. They had oil, and only a select group of people knew that this would be a great way for themselves to make a fortune, the Saudi royal family, while still acting on the line that, oh, well, you know, the West is still here and still trying to... Oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Be an imperial power in this area. So my point being that Islamic hatred of the West goes way deep and goes even deeper than just the Israeli-Palestinian issue. So even if it were solvable, even if you somehow could convince Hamas to stop being anti-Semitic, to stop hating Israel, if you somehow manage to convince, and it is only Hamas, you know, anyone that says, and I really believe this, anyone that says part of this issue is Israel, I'm not going to go as far as to call him an anti-Semite, but it's definitely anti-Israeli. Anyone that says that any of the issues that we're currently having today is the fault of Israel does not understand the situation at all. The Palestinians have been given every opportunity, and they've blown it every single time to create peace there. But let's pretend for just one moment that this was even possible, that somehow you could create peace between Palestine and Israel and you're in a separate Palestinian state and everyone's happy and, you know, there's a rainbow over the Middle East. How exactly does that help Iraq? you have a completely different issue there. Essentially, you have the Shiites who want Sharia, who want a Iran type of theocracy. You have the Baathists, the Sunnis, that either want a secular government or at least want Saddam Hussein back, and you have the Kurds who want their own state. And who act as if the Arabs and the Persians, the Muslims, are this monolith that if you do one thing, it'll automatically bleed into everything else. It's almost smacks of racism. The Iraqis have other issues at stake than whether or not the Palestinians get their own state. That was more Saddam Hussein's thing. He was the one giving money to the Palestinian suicide bombers. He was the one capitalizing on anti-Semitism. With him gone, the everyday average Iraqi has other issues going on than just that. So, again, the Iraq Study Group, under James Baker, who, as I understand it, pro-Saudi, anti-Israel, just sort of adds more fuel to the fire that you have this mystical, magical answer to everything by just ending the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. I think it's false hope. I think it's just false all the way around. And, the fact that we waited so long for this thing to come out, this report, and it to be nothing that, you know, hasn't already been covered in a variety of blogs, you know, by Democrat congressmen, it's just frustrating. You know, and it wouldn't surprise me if the president doesn't take it seriously, though, you know, James Baker is his dad's man, so who knows. But this is all I'm going to say about the Iraq Study Group. It's nothing that we hadn't already talked about before. I can't believe we waited with bated breath for this thing. And if you really want a solution to what's going on in Iraq, try asking the generals. Try asking the vets. You know, I think there's an organization, Veterans for Victory, Vets for Victory. Why don't you ask them what to do? Try asking military people what to do about a war instead of politicians and oil magnates and investors. With that said, I'm going to bring in, after all that, I'm going to use this line anyway, I'm going to bring in my spiritual advisor, the Jesse Jackson to my Bill Clinton, Reverend John. John, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I was just looking under the couch to make sure I wasn't the one with the weapons of mass destruction.
John, do you have anything else to say? I did about 10 minutes or so on this. Do you have anything else you want to add to what there is to say about the Iraq Study Group and their report?
Not so much the Iraq Study Group, but I'll be honest with you. After 5 years of weapons of mass destruction and stay the course and they hate us for our freedom, as soon as I hear the word Iraq, all I hear after that is Bagak.
Bagak, indeed. And that brings us to the Bagak report. Said I was going to keep doing this, folks, and I tell you, there's nothing finer in a political show than chicken noises. But we actually have a serious story to talk about. I dealt with this on my blog in the article entitled Zombie Chickens and Electric Cows. And, it started off with, I got to tell this story, John, real quick. I had a client in my office, and whenever we have to do just straight paperwork, we're not doing necessarily, full-on therapy. I'll let the kids, since there's a lot of typing involved, I'll let the kids sit at the desk and put the radio on. And they always put on rap music. And one kid turned to this hip-hop station, and it looks like the morning show, they were doing a radio spot for the morning show guys, and I happened to hear the phrase, and these chickens rise out of their grave, and we've turned to calling them zombie chickens. And then, they advertise the morning show guys. And I went, what? Or like Kyle's mother from the South Park, what? So I stopped doing his treatment plan to look up zombie chickens. And this is what I found. This is from www.pressdemocrat.com. It's called Recycling Chickens.
Okay.
Farmers turn to composting amid collapsed spent hen market. When Jim Stauffer of Petaluma saw a chicken crawling out of a mound of compost like the living dead, he knew something had changed at the egg farm next door. I'm just picturing what this looks like, I mean, I'm just Michael Jackson with a bunch of chickens behind him. Dun, 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 dun. Thriller back. We called them zombie chickens, Stauffer said. Some of them crawled right up out of the ground. They'd get out and stagger around. What changed was the method used to get rid of spent hens, which are chickens that are no longer able to produce eggs. And the change isn't just in Petaluma, it's throughout the country. Oh, good. Much like the WKRP turkey drop, the chickens are going to mount a counterattack and attack us.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. Best line in the history of television.
Oh, it's up there, that's for sure. The market for spent hen meat has collapsed. Since May, there isn't a California facility willing to take them. That means finding a way to dispose of more than a half a million spent hens a year, and that's just in Sonoma County area, mostly around Petaluma, where chickens and eggs have been an agricultural staple for a century. As a last resort, many farmers have turned to killing the chickens and using them to make piles of compost. And here's where it gets a little creepy.
Okay.
Hens are placed in a sealed box, which is filled with carbon monoxide. Within seconds, the chickens are unconscious. Less than 2 minutes later, they die from lack of oxygen. Or so we think. Da-na-na. Back. Farmers say that method for euthanizing and composting the chickens is humane, and health officials... How? Health officials say that they have heard no complaints. Certainly not from the chickens.
Yeah, no complaint from the chickens?
No, apparently not. I'm actually surprised PETA hasn't gotten involved in this.
They're probably too busy throwing paint on people.
It's entirely possible. The dead chickens are layered into a mound of sawdust. In about a month, it turns into compost, farmers said. They said the incident described by Stauffer, in which about two dozen chickens crawled out of the compost pile, was an anomaly probably caused by inexperience.
Back up a second. Who's inexperienced? Were the chickens inexperienced dying?
Excuse me?
Who's inexperienced? Were the chickens the one who were inexperienced in how they're supposed to die properly? Were they not killed properly? Like
Yeah, I think that's the issue here.
Okay.
Hey, I just want to say one thing here. I got an instant message here from Georgia who says, "Hi, Mark, it's Georgia. Here's a page with chicken sound effects that I think you can download and re-upload on your host page."
Oh, that's fantastic.
That is if you need the chicken sound effects. Well,
nope.
Thank you, Georgia. Though I think we're doing pretty good with just the chicken noises by ourselves. But you know what? I am going to check that out because you never know when you can find a good chicken noise.
Wait a second. Let me get this straight. We talk about Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about U.S. politics. We talk about everything that's going on in the world. We don't get a comment or a phone call. You want to make chicken noises and we have people instant messaging you on where you can find real chicken noises?
Well, in her defense, she is the program director at Blog Talk Radio, so she's trying to help out here.
Oh, okay. Well, that changes it. I thought that when you said Georgia, I thought it was just someone from Georgia.
No. It's one of the Blog Talk Radio employees.
Georgia, if you're listening, I apologize.
And we thank her for that contribution to the show. Maybe next week we will have digital chicken noises, and we'll clock into the future.
But until then,
exactly. So apparently they're not gassing them right. That's the issue. And they think they're dead, and they're rising from the compost when they finally regain consciousness is what's happening.
And these people are your future congressmen.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. In any case, so that's the chickens. Now I said I wanted to make as part of the report that I wanted to do at least one thing from worldpoultry.com for a week. So their take on it, and again, you know, it's funny. Almost everywhere that I've looked at this, there has been, Georgia is the host liaison.
A host liaison?
Host liaison.
Is that kind of like how you're the pundit par excellence?
No, I think that's an actual real title.
That'd
okay. Be fun. In any case, worldpoultry.net.
Okay.
Handled this a bit more seriously than the PressDemocrat.com.
Now, Mark, the question is, how do you handle a story about zombie chicken seriously?
It's very simple. They, in their article, debate over how to deal with old chickens. They say much the same thing, but, you know, they just leave out the zombie chickens part. They don't even get into that. They just say that, you know, in the region of Petaluma, they're not euthanizing the chickens correctly, and the chickens may be suffering as a result. And basically, there's a small uproar in the poultry community about what to do with spent hens. And so they suggest a food bank proposed making sausage to feed the poor. I've heard that in a few places, as a matter of fact, and while I was researching this. A reptile enthusiast suggested using them as food for large exotic pets like pythons and alligators. Don't see why not. I mean, have you ever gone to a fish store and they actually have...
Yep.
Sorry, George is back one more time, and she says it's better than tech weenie. It certainly is, Georgia. It certainly is. Getting back to this.
Back to the pet store.
Yes. Back to the back.
I know the pet store you're talking about.
PetSmart, they actually have feeder fish to feed the bigger fish. You know,
oh,
feeder.
No. I thought you were talking about here in Massapequa when I was a kid, there was a pet store where you'd pay a dollar and you could watch them feeding a reptile with, like, a live mouse.
Right. Okay. I actually know which pet store you're talking about. You're talking about the one over by Island Rec.
No, actually, apparently more than one pet store does that. I was talking to one by the train station.
Oh, okay. That's good. Now, the other three people listening to this from New York know what we're talking about. In any case...
Wait a second. We have three people listening to this?
It's entirely possible.
I didn't even know we went live yet.
An industry group said in the future they could be used as fuel for power plants. I'm going to read that line again. An industry group said in the future they could be used as fuel for power plants.
God, what besides oil are people not trying to use for fuel?
Well, that's a very good question, because apparently you can make anything into fuel. And I've just learned this. When I posted this article on 411mania.com/politics, and if you're just listening, we are talking, in fact, about my zombie chicken articles. And if you want to call in, for the next few minutes, we're going to be discussing not only how you can turn chickens into oil and stop buying crude from those dirty Arabs, but how you can turn just about anything into oil, and we can actually do something in the way of divorcing ourselves from a complete dependence on foreign oil. So if you want to call in and talk about that, or if you, too, want to make chicken noises, I'll be more than happy to hear you.
Okay.
But...
why don't you give them the phone number again?
Yeah, the phone number to call in if you want to talk about zombie chickens or make chicken noises or talk about oil or the Iraq Study Group or Israelis.
Or Georgia.
Yes, if you want to call Georgia Tech Weenie, you can call in at 646-915-8862. In any case, getting back to this, I learned when I posted this article on 411mania.com/politics, I got an email back from one of my readers who suggested, well, why don't we, because I had suggested in the article that there is a method of turning, I just thought, the chicken waste into fuel. And that they had already done this routine in Europe with cows. And I thought, okay, well, maybe, you know, there's something about the cow that makes it different. And I, you know, and that's where the whole electric cows thing came in. And I said, okay, well, let me research this a little bit more. And I posted that in the article that they had tried it with cows and that they were going to try other methods and whatnot. What I found out via this email, he had suggested just turning the chickens themselves into oil. And I said, okay, well, how do you do that? And the word of the day, children, is thermal depolymerization.
Look it up.
Yeah, Wikipedia has a whole thing on this. But in my notes that I found out, thermal depolymerization is a process that converts stuff into oil. And by stuff, that means just about anything. Garbage, medical waste, animals, animal parts, like cows with mad cow disease, spent hens, offal from chickens that have been made into McNuggets, used computer parts, though you can actually take computer parts and mine them for precious metals, but that'll be on a different show.
Wait a second. They actually use chickens for chicken McNuggets?
Tires and so on. You can pretty much, again, anything that's organic you can make into oil, basically by heating it up. It's the same process that makes fossil fuels in the earth naturally. You can replicate this process and turn things into oil. And they're doing this in Missouri, Carthage, Missouri, to be exact. One of the companies, Butterball Turkey, partnered up with Butterball Turkey Plants, they're taking 200 tons of turkeys and making them into oil. I believe the word is offal. This was set up by Renewable Environmental Solutions. That's RES, Renewable Environmental Solutions. which is a subsidiary of Changing World Technologies, which is in West Hempstead, which is off near your hood these days.
What up?
They're also looking at turning, you know, they're working right now on animal products, but they're also looking on fine-tuning it so they can just take garbage, which will be good because we have so many Superfund sites and landfills in this country with garbage that just can't be recycled, that you can actually, if you can, you know, burn them and turn them into oil, you can do a great deal in cleaning up the environment. What it says here is that essentially the depolymerization process mimics the earth process itself, where what gets buried and breaks it down burns it. Let's see here. In any case, if you want to learn a little bit more about that, I would suggest going to res-energy.com. I know the one thing I found out about this when I was doing some research is that you have to make sure if you're going to do this that you put in filters to make sure that you don't toxify the air. I know that when I was doing some research this morning, there was an article saying that they had been cited for air quality violations, but I don't know if it was on purpose or not, because again, everything I've read about this plant is they are trying very, very hard to be clean and green. One of the things that also comes out of the depolymerization process is you also create water. So you're burning something, you're making oil with it, and you're making water, which can be treated and resold as bottled water. Again, more money.
And this is wait, hang on. This all starts with the spent hen.
Yeah, this all starts with anything. You can use anything as feedstock.
So you can use anything to make anything.
You can make anything to make oil and
okay.
Water. Actually, there was a chart in Wikipedia which I want to go over really quick before we move on with this. You can use plastic bottles, and plastic bottles produces 70% oil and 8% water.
Mm-hmm.
Turkey offal is 39% oil, 50% water. Paper, 8% oil, 20% water. Though I don't know why you'd want to use paper, seeing as you can just recycle and make more paper.
Mm-hmm.
Sewer sludge is 26% oil and
nice.
57% water. Medical waste, which instead of dumping it into the East River,
mm-hmm.
you can do 65% oil, 20% water. Tires, which again, I don't know why you'd want to do it this way, but it's 44% oil and 4% water. So, I mean, between the medical waste, which you can't do anything else with, plastic bottles, which if you don't want to turn them back into plastic, you can do this, seem to have the most ability to create maximum amount of oil. So I hope more companies out there will look into green renewable energy and will, you know, and go with this thermal depolymerization method. Because, I mean, like I said, if you can make sure it's treated so that you don't toxify the air, I really think it's going to hold a lot of answers. And every time I've done some research on this, I've heard great science, but not a whole lot of practicality except for this place in Carthage, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
But talking about the environment, that brings us to our next topic. Again, I reported this on my blog this week, and that is that Barbara Boxer will be taking over the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee and replacing Republican Senator from Oklahoma, James Inhofe. Got a story here from the San Jose Mercury News. Senator Boxer promises new agenda on climate change. And here it says, the purpose of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee hearing Wednesday was to examine this burning question. Is a sensation-seeking media hyping the threat of global warming? Barbara Boxer says, no, duh. James Inhofe says, yes, of course they are, and has actually been on Fox News within the last month, going on and on and on, as he is wont to do, about how there's no such thing as global warming and that the media is making it up.
The liberal media, as opposed to Fox News.
Yes. Well, actually, when he did this, there was one guy, he did this on their version of a morning show, and one guy argued with him, and he got promptly shouted down, and the other guy, James Ducey, I think it was right there with them. So there you go, fair and balanced on Fox News. But anyway, the result was prime political theater. An outgoing Republican chairman attacked alarmism and bias by the media, while Senator Barbara Boxer, the California Democrat, who I'm really no fan of except for this particular issue, who becomes chairman next month, promised a new agenda to tackle climate change. Senator James Inhofe, in his swan song as chairman, produced posters and charts he said showed a biased media that has become an advocate. The Oklahoma Republican railed at Time Magazine and Tom Brokaw's report on the Discovery Channel. He derided the New York Times for reporting 30 years ago that global cooling may be on the way. Boxer, clearly exasperated, and I can see why, retaliated with poster boards of blown-up quotes on the threat of climate change from Business Week, the Financial Times, not exactly a liberal institution, and just to rub it in, the Tulsa World from Inhofe's home state.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sad that we're arguing over who to believe rather than solving the problem, Boxer said. And how, Babs, and how. Attacking the press doesn't make the truth go away. No, it doesn't.
try as we might.
Boxer pledged in-depth hearings on global warming and a push to restrict carbon emissions and other greenhouse gases that contribute to climate change with a focus on what California has done with its regulations. I hate to say it, but California has actually been leading the way in climate change legislation and green renewable businesses, oddly enough. It's, you know, sometimes I think, you know, if we're going to go the way California goes, I get very, very scared because then 10 is the new 15 and we have all kinds of problems. But, and 10 is the new 15, we'll deal with another time.
Yeah.
But in this issue with the hydrogen highway and all of that, I think California really is a good at setting the bar for where we need to go on the environment.
It's all about Governor Schwarzenegger.
Yes, and his hydrogen Hummer. What I want to say about this is, you know, you have Barbara Boxer, who has pledged that there's going to be a sea change in the way that we tackle climate. And we've talked a few times about Al Gore and his Inconvenient Truth and all of that. One of the things that I want to point out about the way the Republicans have handled climate change is that it really is all about the money. One of the biggest contributors to James Inhofe campaign fund is actually the coal industry. I mean, I was doing some research earlier today, and this is from, I believe it's, I want to say it's publicrecord.com. I'll double check that. All of the information that I give you today will be on the website with the links. So, but they have a chart here that shows the top industries supporting James Inhofe were oil and gas, $314,708, electric utilities, and the retired. Those are the top three. But those first two, I mean, that's really all about coal. You have oil and gas and the electric utilities. This is about coal. And the top actual company is Murray Energy. The Murray Energy Corporation is actually the largest independent family-held coal producer in the United States. Now, why am I sharing this with you? There's an article out of Wyoming that says coal production in the new Congress, is the name of it, says not long after Democrats swept into Congress last month, President Bush received a letter from three incoming Senate committee chairs that may one day prove important to people working in the Campbell County coal mines. We seek your commitment to work with the new Congress to pass meaningful climate change legislation in 2007, the trio wrote in a letter. The U.S. must move quickly to adopt economy-wide constraints on domestic, which is greenhouse gas, emissions, and then work with the international community to forge an effective and equitable global agreement. This came from Boxer, Jeff Bingham, Democrat from New Mexico, and our good friend Joe Lieberman, independent from Connecticut. And it's a lot different than what James Inhofe from Oklahoma has said on this issue. He's, you know, again, repeatedly denounced global warming and has had more hearings on whether or not it exists than on actually what to do with it. Now, this is the crux of it. It says, as one Washington, D.C.-based coal lobbyist said last week, coal would not have had the resurgence it had over the last 6 years if former Vice President Al Gore got elected. We probably would have seen a carbon tax or something like that, and I think there's a fair chance you'll see it or some progress towards it. I gave you a book, John. Did you ever read it, The Empty Tank?
No, I don't read.
And in that book, it talks about how people think that coal will be king when we finally run out of oil. And the problem is, as the book points out by Jeremy Leggett, if you burn coal at any higher rate than we're currently burning it, you're eventually going to increase the rate of global warming to the point that you're going to cause massive storms and weather damage around the world. I'm going to do a little bit more of this at a later date, but essentially, if you know, everyone says clean coal or, you know, coal to replace oil, and I'm telling you right now, if we do that, we're going to damage the environment exponentially. And so it's a good thing that we got James Inhofe out of there, as he was one of these people pushing coal on an unsuspecting public who really doesn't seem to understand this issue or the kind of damage that coal does. You got anything to say on this?
John? I'm glad he's gone, too. I know that as far as global warming goes, I'm no scientist. I'm no environmentalist. I also don't even play one on television. But I know today, being December 10th, I went from listening to White Christmas playing on one of my music channels to walking outside in December wearing shorts and a T-shirt.
And you don't even live in Florida.
No, I don't even live in Florida. I live in New York, where, like, you know, cool people live.
All right, John. So I've been going on and on and on. We've talked about the Iraq Study Group.
And on and on and on.
We've talked about the Iraq Study Group. We've talked about zombie chickens. We talked about global warming and Barbara Boxer and outgoing Republican James Inhofe. I brought you on today because I wanted you to sing your song about the 2008 election blues. Why do you get the blues, John?
I'm not actually going to sing the blues because, quite frankly, you know, we'd lose all three of the listeners we have right now.
Nah, Georgia says we have six.
Six? That's awesome.
Yes.
I like Georgia.
Yes.
But, no, I mean, I was watching, because I'll start off my morning watching IMS in the morning to get my news. And every so often you've got these, you know, your basic political pundit / shill, and it doesn't matter if it's conservative or liberal because they're all the same. They just make fun of different people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting to the point where no matter what any of the people running for president or running for anything stand for or do, there's someone to say that they can't get elected because of it. And I take John McCain for an example because it's the world's worst kept secret that I'm in the tank for McCain. And he also happens to get it on both ends. He gets it from conservatives and liberals, kind of like a pair of
fingers. Well, in some cases, rightly so.
Yeah. Kind of like a pair of finger cuffs. He had, one of the conservative radio shills. I forget the guy's name, but he's from Massachusetts, and he's not Jay Severin. Saying how, you know, like McCain can't get the Republican nomination because he doesn't have a popular view on what to do about the immigration problem, and he's co-sponsoring a bill with Ted Kennedy. But then you also have people saying that McCain won't be able to win the general election because he has an unpopular stance about the war and that we really need to admit that we made mistakes, send more troops in and try and win it. And I'm kind of wondering at what point did someone standing by what they believe and standing by their convictions disqualify you from leading our country?
That's a good question. I know we talked about this earlier in the week, you know, when we were just chatting on the phone, or as I like to call it, dress rehearsals.
Yes.
And both of us said, you know, if you actually stand for something, no one will vote for you.
Because even on
you just get out there and be bold.
Yeah.
And everyone goes, oh, you know. And so it's like everyone says, yes, well, I think that's a great idea, but that'll never play in this other place that I don't live in.
Yeah.
And therefore, I have to vote for milquetoast.
Yeah, and then even on the other side, I mean, well, actually, there's one other thing where, you know, that douchebag Paul Begala, where
wait,
you know,
John, now explain to the nice people why Paul Begala is a douchebag.
I'm about to.
Okay, then.
I forget the gentleman's name, but there was a rumor this week that John McCain might be choosing the guy who produced those Harold Ford Jr. commercials to be his campaign manager for his campaign that he hasn't announced yet.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rumor. McCain hasn't commented on it. He hasn't even officially said he was running. It was just a rumor. That could have easily been started by the guy himself, just to better position himself for later on down the road. So the douchebag Paul Begala, who every time he calls into IMUS always makes it a point to take a shot at McCain because, you know, that's what political douchebags do. They just attack the other guy. And he knows IMUS is a friend of his. Gets on and he says something along the lines of, can you believe that John McCain's going to hire this guy who produces racist crap? I believe Michael Richards must have been busy that week.
Boo.
Yeah. But also, I mean, as far as the what you stand for and why you can't get elected. On the flip side to that, the other side of the aisle, you see kind of what Barack Obama is going through, where first there's people saying, well, he can't get elected because he hasn't been around long enough to have a strong congressional vote record. But if he did have a strong congressional vote record, he wouldn't be able to get elected because of what he voted for. So basically the only two things that will make you president is your ability to raise a lot of money and your ability to completely manipulate the media. And you see what you get when those are the only two options.
Yes, you get nuclear.
Yeah.
However the president says it.
But so it's just, you know.
It's frustrating. I can only go back to the Democratic primary race, you know, the eight dwarves or whatever they were calling them in the press.
I personally like Jon Stewart calling it the race from the White House.
You know, and that's when you had Mosley Braun, you had Al Sharpton, Dennis Kucinich, oh gosh, Lieberman, Edwards, Kerry. Who was the one that dropped out after Iowa?
Gephardt.
Thank you, Gephardt. Am I leaving anybody out? In any case, you had all these guys in there, and. You know, Edwards, I'm going to say something very nice about Edwards, too. I think one of my six listeners out there. Edwards had a very, very positive outlook on things. He had, great ideas in the sense that, you know, he wanted to do different things, and he really did want to help people. Unfortunately, anybody listening to his ideas thought, my God, you're going to expand the government exponentially, or you're going to have to cut something in order to do what it is you say you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But at least, you know, he tried. You know, Al Sharpton stood for, speaking loudly and divisively.
Mm-hmm.
You had Dennis Kucinich, who stood for...
being insane.
Being insane. My favorite thing about Dennis Kucinich was him wanting to create a Department of Peace.
But,
you know, and my point being is you had Howard Dean. That was the one I was forgetting. But Howard Dean, I think when he wasn't going, on camera...
Yeah.
Actually, and you hear people talk to him, he had some great ideas about healthcare and could speak about it very in-depth.
But the press didn't like him.
Right. And that's the thing. Here you had a guy who did stand for something. You know, he did. You know, he ran on being anti-Iraq, which again, what to get you headlines. But when he actually talked to real people,
mm-hmm.
he had other ideas about what to do as being head of the executive branch. And you never saw much of that. You had to really look for it. And the thing of it was, it didn't matter because he still got eviscerated.
Yeah, because then, you know, Howard Dean would have been the ideal candidate for the Democrats. First of all, he was, instead of just focusing on Iowa and New Hampshire, he was campaigning throughout all 50 United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drawing hundreds of thousands to, in some cases, millions of people to rallies.
I got to cut in here one sec. Georgia has been listening this whole time, and she just wrote in, being insane, isn't that a prerequisite to being a politician?
Probably. Just a little bit. And
thank
okay.
you for that contribution.
Yeah, so, Dean ran across the country. He was insane.
Mm-hmm.
He was against the war, and unlike the other candidates, actually took a stance against the war, explained why he was against the war, like most Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the flip side of that, he was also fiscally conservative, and even had the endorsement of the NRA. So you have a liberal Democrat who stands for being a liberal Democrat, who's endorsed by the NRA, had a health care plan, you know, and ideas of where to get the money to pass it, but because the New York Times decided that they like John Kerry better, that was the nominee.
And that was the thing. When I say milquetoast, I think the poster boy for being milquetoast is John Kerry. The argument I heard from every liberal / Democrat / people who kicked me out of barbecues said to me...
I still can't believe you got kicked out of a barbecue.
I don't want to talk about it. Said to me the same thing. I like Howard Dean, but capital B, capital U, capital T. He's not electable.
But
which I think is such a subjectively ridiculous term.
Not
How
to mention
you know
not true.
Electable?
Not to mention not true, because John Kerry almost won, and he didn't stand for anything.
Which means Howard Dean might have won because he actually stood for something.
I mean, you could essentially take John Kerry supporters and split them into three groups. A third of them actually thought that he'd make a good president. The other third just voted for him because he was the guy in the suit standing next to President Bush. And
of course, I like to call Dean, not Bush, people.
Yeah. The other third was the Democratic base who was still energized because of Dean.
Right. You know, people that Dean said, look, I'm not the guy, so go support him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it'll be like you're supporting me.
Yeah.
See, this is the thing. And as we go into 2008, I understand the blues, John. I really do. I hear you. I hear your song. Because I don't understand why the media paints a picture of the average American voter that goes something like, if you don't do everything I ask you to do in the order I ask you to do it, I won't vote for you. Meh. I don't think the average American voter who's paying attention and does vote is that infantile.
Yeah.
I think people can look at McCain and look at the wide range of issues that he does stand for and does take a stand on and say, well, no, he doesn't do everything I want him to do, but I think he's the best choice as compared to this guy.
The great Ed Koch.
Woman.
The great Ed Koch, former mayor of New York City, had this quote. If you agree with me on 8 out of 12 things, you should vote for me. If you agree with me on 12 out of 12 things, you should have your head examined.
And I think that sums it up right there.
Yeah.
All right. We have, according to my duration clock,
okay.
we've been on the air for about 54 minutes and 49 seconds, which means we have about 5 minutes. Wait for it. Wait for it. We have 5 minutes exactly to do this.
Go.
All right. Conspiracy or quack? The first time I did this, I had done a story about a possible cure developed in France, a vaccine for HIV. And then I got an email from somebody saying there's already a cure, and he sent me the link. And I found absolutely no verification of this. I had seen some degree of talk about the person involved, but essentially what he was saying was there was already a cure, somebody had found it, and that person was summarily subverted and suppressed.
Yes.
Okay, if you're looking for that, that's conspiracy or quack, a cure for AIDS.
Yes.
That I'd posted, I think, about before I moved out of New York, so it had to be late 2004. The next conspiracy or quack I wrote about was having to do with Iran, as half my articles do.
Get right to this article.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
And that was about how this whole thing about the Middle East is actually some crazy Christian thing about the Battle of Mog and Magog, or whatever the hell it's called.
The Battle of Azeroth.
It's not the Battle of Azeroth. PajamasMedia.com.
Please repeat that.
PajamasMedia.com, or okay. The Raw Story calls them, a conservative website, had a story called Star Wars Redux, Democrats to Cut Missile Defense, / Bush to Announce, quote, Orbital Battle Station, unquote.
Let me jump in here. On the first half of that, I'm right away going to say quack. Because on the first half of that, Democrats being against missile defense, not really news. As for President Bush wanting to create his own Death Star to orbit the moon, the man does not – forget about having the political capital to spend to try and convince people this is a good idea. He's in political debt. Like, before he could do anything else, he owes George Allen and Rick Santorum a sandwich.
Okay. Before you go any further with this, I want to say that the article was actually written by Taylor Dinneman, who writes for Space Review. That's the spacereview.com. And has written on a number of space and defense issues for the Wall Street Journal,
mm-hmm.
the National Review, and Ad Astra, the magazine of the National Space Society, Space News, and elsewhere.
And maybe there's a reason why the Wall Street Journal and the National Review passed on this article, and it had to go to pajamasmedia.com.
Well, look, you know, it may just be that the Wall Street Journal doesn't want to get into stories about space.
Maybe. Right, because all the mainstream papers are owned by the corporations.
Look, I think it's entirely believable that George Bush might want his own Death Star. And let's explain what we're talking about when we say Death Star. It's a satellite. There's a picture of it on the pajamasmedia.com. And it's basically a big satellite with the panels and everything, and it's got, and I'll read this to you, each battle station would be a fairly large satellite that carried a number of perhaps 40 to 50 infrared guided vehicles, missiles. On orders from the ground, the battle station would launch these kill vehicles, roughly about the size of a loaf of bread, at incoming missiles.
Oh, God.
See, it's missile defense, John. Missile defense. It's entirely believable. It's not impossible to put a satellite in the sky and arm it with rockets to prevent, you know, North Korea from shooting a missile at us.
At the battle station.
That's what they're calling it. I mean, the you know, it's all about marketing. You know, he could have called it anything. I mean, listen, when Reagan first promoted the idea of strategic missile defense (SDI), the media themselves were calling it. They were calling it Star Wars. That's why this whole thing is called Star Wars Redux. See.
Mhm.
So it's entirely possible. Could it be conspiracy? Could it be, you know, quack? Could it be real? I'm going to go with real here. I think the pajamas media is absolutely an accurate source of news.
I want you to repeat what you just said.
The pajamas media is an accurate source of news.
ThePajamasMedia.com.
I want to add to this that I initially did not find the story at ThePajamasMedia.com. I found the link through the Drudge Report.
Right, but Drudge isn't a reporter himself. He reads an article and he posts a link.
Right. And clearly he would not post something on his site that he did not believe to be true.
But so, he didn't research it.
I think we're almost out of time, John.
PajamasMedia.com.
All right. We're not out of time. We actually have a few more minutes left. And I want you and I'm not convinced. I believe this is real.
Okay.
PajamasMedia.com. There's nothing wrong with this. And this was even on the Raw story. Granted, it was reported sort of in third person that a conservative website was reporting that George Bush wants his own battle station. Okay, but you were saying how he's in political debt and he can't do this. And at least now we know what we're talking about. We're not talking about a big globe in the sky that blows planets up. We're talking about a satellite that shoots rockets at missiles.
Mm.
Headed towards, you know, New York.
But it's only one step away from a space station.
He can't blow up a planet. And by the way, Georgia says she wants her own Death Star.
Georgia, whose side are you on?
Clearly, she's on my side.
But JohnsMedia.com. Okay? Okay, not to mention, any story that picked up on it didn't do the research themselves. They just saw the link on Drudge, who didn't do the research himself. He just read an article.
But he writes for the Wall Street Journal.
Then the Wall Street Journal would, if there was any merit to this, the Wall Street Journal would have reported it.
John, you're about a few seconds away from just speaking and speaking and trying to make your point and just erupting in a big bagack.
No, I'm not going to.
You're getting there.
Nope. No more chicken noises until next week.
No, okay. I'm just saying you're sounding a bit exasperated. Why don't you buy into the reasonable possibility that George Bush wants his own Death Star to protect us from Kim Jong-il?
Because my name is Reverend John, not Tim Robbins or Rob Reck.
And Georgia declares she's on Darth Vader's side.
I hate you both. I really do. The fact that we're sitting here arguing the merit of a news story that was on pajamasmedia.com. Pajamasmedia.com.
It had 308 comments.
BFD!
I'm just saying, many people weighed in on this.
And many people are morons.
Look, the first comment says that he's glad to see an article that finally highlights these issues.
Well, that's because these are probably the same people who think 9/11 was a conspiracy.
No, there's clearly two different groups of people here.
No.
So do you seriously think that the Democrats are serious about cutting missile defense?
Serious about it? No. The fact that they don't like missile defense, yes.
Okay. See, that automatically means that this is real.
Oh, this automatically means that you're stupid.
I am not stupid.
You are stupid.
No, why am I stupid? Because I believe in pajamas media.
You used to be the smart one.
I'm just saying.
No, that was always the gimmick. I was the cute, funny one. You were the smart one. But now that you're believing pajamas media, I have to find a new smart friend.
We are over time.
Okay.
We are now into the recorded part of this show. So the final words that people got live exactly were, "You used to be the smart one."
Okay. Do we still have to sign off, or can I just hang up?
I'll see you next week, John.
Bye.